Hi, I'm Mark Webber.
Hi, I'm Daniel Ricciardo, also known as the best looking kid in the F1 paddock, and you're listening to the Keeping Track podcast.
You're listening to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. In this week's episode, McLaren team principal Martin Whitmarsh joins us to discuss Formula One's return to the United States. V8 supercar star Mark Winterbottom gives us a lowdown on the Circuit of the Americas in Austin. And we look ahead to the final two races set to decide this year's World Championship. There's all that and more on Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix.
Hello and welcome to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. Matt Clayton with you for episode 19 of our show, and we now have just two races to go in this year's Formula One World Championship. The sport will return to America next weekend in Austin, and later on we'll hear from McLaren team principal Martin Whitmarsh on just why F1 needs to embrace the United States. To get a taste of the Circuit of the Americas and Austin itself, we'll chat to FPR V8 supercar driver Mark Winterbottom, who visited the track earlier this year. But first, to discuss the many issues that came out of the most recent Grand Prix in Abu Dhabi, I'm joined by Cam McConville. Cam, welcome.
Thanks, Matt. Good to be back again.
Abu Dhabi, fairly interesting race, you'd have to say. The first win in the second career for Kimi Raikkonen. It was his first win since Belgium 09. The first win for that team, which was formerly known as Lotus Renault and other things besides, since Japan 2008. The key part of the race, really, we'll talk about Lewis Hamilton's unfortunate retirement later on, but Kimi, once he was out front, as he told the team, he knew what he was doing and got on with that, as we remember from his radio messages.
Yeah, look, I'm a Kimi fan, so I'll just declare my bias straight up because I think he's great for Formula One. He adds colour, and he's been extremely consistent this year. I mean, he showed up his teammate who has far less experience, but is going to have to step up next year, which we can touch on a little bit later as well. But he... the Iceman, you know, he's so quick. His racecraft is spectacular. As I said, I'm a massive fan of Kimi, and I agree, he did inherit it, but he's just been knocking on the door, you know. And if you have a look at the consistency, he's probably been more consistent than Mark Webber in far inferior equipment. So a great drive. And I agree, there's nothing worse than an engineer on the radio saying silly things, and I actually thought that was a very good comment. I believe he's going to merchandise that. Is that right?
He has. The story I've been told is that they've gone and got 500 T-shirts printed with the words, "Leave me alone, I know what I'm doing." He's going to present them to each member of the team at Enstone in between races, which I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah, it went global on Twitter and social media and all that sort of stuff. And sometimes what surprises me is actually at the level of Formula One, is the amount of dumb comments that come over the radio. You know, you want to hear gaps, and as a race driver, certainly not to that level, but, you know, you want to hear information that's relative to your race. But some of the stuff that comes out and, actually telling them how to drive, I just think I'm surprised that there aren't more Kimi comments coming back the other way from the cockpit sometimes.
Well, imagine if he was a man who actually spoke a lot. I think the telling one was when they were telling him to warm his tyres up behind the safety car. This is a guy who's been a world champion and has raced since 2003. I think he has a reasonable idea of what to do.
Yeah, well, you hear sometimes, particularly to Lewis, a lot on the warm-up laps, more brake temperature, Lewis. I mean, they're monitoring all these sorts of things. And for a restart, you need to have everything up to temp, etc. But even I know that as a ute driver these days, that when the safety car's out, of course you're going to warm the tyres up and you're going to do it more aggressively as the safety car lights are extinguished. So, yeah, it surprises me. But anyway, great to see Kimi break through, and I was confident that he was going to break through for a win this year at some stage.
Now, I did mention before that it was a win inherited, as good as Kimi was in some respects. Lewis Hamilton forced to retire from the lead for the second time in the last five races, also happened to him in Singapore. He was reasonably philosophical in the circumstances. It was a fuel pressure issue that forced him out, and perhaps if he didn't have his contract sorted so well for next year, he might have thrown the toys out of the cot, but it was, you know, pretty disappointing because he really was the class of the field.
Yeah, right through the whole weekend. And it's funny you should say that, because it's a very different Lewis Hamilton now, and drivers are big on security, and you wouldn't think that they lack confidence or lack that security blanket of a contract, but they do, even at that level. And so his demeanour's completely changed. because normally, as you say, there would have been a massive tyrant on Twitter, and he's probably lost a few followers, I reckon, this year, Lewis, by some of those comments. But you know, he copped it on the chin, and you know, he also was probably happy with his efforts. You know, he was obviously going to win the motor race, and it's going to be very interesting to follow his progress in early 2013.
Well, he's philosophical about losing a win there. I'm not sure how he's going to be going at Mercedes. Incidentally, since he signed for Mercedes, they have not scored a single point, Mercedes. But while we're talking things that are pointless, the man who's replacing Lewis at McLaren for next year in Sergio Perez, he hasn't scored a point since he signed for McLaren in 2013. He's had some clumsy crashes, had a drive-through in Abu Dhabi. In your view, Cam, do you think he's ready for a seat at the top table yet? We've seen some comments from Martin Whitmarsh saying that there's going to be a whole new batch of pressure on him next year. He hasn't really lived up to it in the last few races, has he?
No, he hasn't, no doubt. And he can probably hide with the equipment a little bit from time to time. But, you know, at Albert Park this year, I would have said 100% he's ready, you know. But a little bit too hit and miss, you know. And I think that's going to be the problem. He's going to have to deliver top five results, if not podiums, week in, week out. So still got a lot to learn, I think, from a race car race perspective. I think McLaren's a good environment to groom him in that way. So I think they'll certainly get the best out of him. But in the first half a dozen rounds, I don't think we'll see him figuring on the podium. That's an early guess, of course, conducive to the car speed and everything else. But yeah, look, I agree with you. I think he's going to have to step up a little bit next year.
Now, of course, one of the men whose race was ended in Abu Dhabi because of an incident caused by Perez about two-thirds of the way through that race was Mark Webber. And it really just capped off a pretty horrendous Sunday for him. He made a very, very poor start. He was pushed down the order by Fernando Alonso on the first lap. He's never liked Abu Dhabi, and it's a funny circuit. You know, a lot of slow-speed corners and, you know, a bit of a disappointing layout given the complete lack of budget they had to work with. But Mark's demeanour there from the moment he arrived, he's never liked the place. He's always got a bit of a negative demeanour about him. He was very feisty on the weekend about things like team orders. He had a whack at the Melbourne Cup on the way through. Really wasn't a great race weekend for him.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the demeanour. I think there's certain circuits that just meet the driver's eye for some reason. It suits their driving style. It might be a tight circuit, late braking, using curbs. You know, obviously, I think one of those for Mark is Monaco. He's very good there. He's good at Silverstone as well. This one clearly doesn't meet his eye. But if you have that negative demeanour, you're on for a bad weekend for us from the start. Mm. You know, we've talked about Mark's launches out of the box off the starts on this show countless times this year. That's something that they've got to get right working for him. And, yeah, look, a bit of bad luck along the way. But I think the odds were completely stacked against him having any decent result. And someone of Mark's experience kind of needs to rise above that, try and stay positive. And because, you know, you're never going to achieve a result when you go in with that attitude.
No, that's right. I mean, he said himself afterwards, to be fair, he said, you know, it's like a golfer saying he only wants to play the par threes. I mean, it doesn't work that way. You've got to work through these circuits that don't suit you for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I agree with him, though, a little bit about Abu Dhabi. I've never been there. It looks unbelievable when there isn't a car on the track, when the lights are lit up. You put a car on the track, it's wide. The camera angles are too high, too wide. It really does look quite docile. And the V8 supercars, well, they looked like road cars driving around there. So some of the Herman Tilke design circuits, you know, look fantastic. They're extremely impressive. Do they produce good racing? I don't think so.
No, I tend to agree with you there. While we're on the subject of Mark Webber, his teammate Sebastian Vettel started 24th and from the pit lane after a fuel problem in qualifying, finished third. Wanted to get your thoughts, Cam, on whether he was more brilliant than he was fortunate. He had some front wing damage with Bruno Senna early in the race. He had the incident with Daniel Ricciardo behind the safety car. The second safety car timing was ideal for him when he made that final stop for tyres. Admittedly, he did a brilliant job, and he said to Christian Horner before the race, "I'll see you on the podium." So the self-belief was there, but to come from 24th to 3rd, you've got to have a lot of things go right.
And that's the difference between he and Mark Webber, that kind of comment, you know, at the moment. I'll see you on the podium. It's like a jockey riding a horse for luck, 100-to-1 shot. That's what he would have gone out there. Nothing to lose. Let's take a bit of a gamble with the strategy. And you're right, that fell towards the end for him with the last safety car. The other thing, too, is when you have a driver that's so dominant in a category, and clearly he's the dominant driver of the last 3 years in Formula One, you see him coming up in the mirror. They don't get in his way. People just didn't challenge. You know, he just was able to pick them off, certainly up until, you know, the back end of the top 10 anyway. And it's a very much a similar scenario we're seeing in V8 supercars with Jamie Whincup. If he drops back in the pack, he knows that he's a winner. He's got the equipment to be at the front. just throw your nose in and people move out of the way. And I think that happened a little bit for Sebastian Vettel, taking nothing away from him because it was a brilliant drive and one of the best we've seen.
Absolutely.
For the modern era anyway.
Absolutely. When we mentioned Daniel Ricciardo before, he almost ran up the back of an Australian behind a safety car. That's never happened to Vettel before. But speaking of Daniel, he was confirmed at Toro Rosso for 2013. He scored points in four of the last five races, finished 10th in Abu Dhabi from a pretty poor qualifying spot. You'd have to say he's ticking all the boxes at this stage.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's got a pretty good teammate there in Vern. I think they sort of spur each other along. Mm. I think he outpaced Vern early on. I thought, oh, he's easily got him covered. But then the mid part of the season, Vern came back at him. So it's a good little challenge there. Where does he go? I mean, he has to move into Mark's slot eventually. But it's great that he's going to get a second year out of it. It'll all be dependent, of course, on the car, how close it is to the Red Bull, and, of course, a different power plant as well. Let's hope that he can sort of compete from that sort of 7th to 10th a little bit more often as opposed to sort of 10 to 12 that we've seen this year.
Let's all hope so. And let's have a look at that World Championship situation. Just Austin and Interlagos to go to finish the 20-round season. Sebastian Vettel, 255 points with two races to go. The only man who can beat him for the title, Fernando Alonso. Second in Abu Dhabi, 10 points in arrears. Kimi Raikkonen in third place. Despite that win in Abu Dhabi, he's 57 points behind the leader and will probably finish third given where he is now. Mark Webber, fourth, 88 points behind the leader. Lewis Hamilton, a further point back in fifth. In the Constructors' title, Red Bull, 422 points. They need just 4 points from the last two races to seal that title, so that should be a formality. Ferrari, 340 in second place, and McLaren in third with 318 points.
Tickets to the GP Breakfast of the 2013 Formula One Australian Grand Prix are now on sale. This exclusive breakfast will be held at the Crown Palladium Ballroom on Saturday the 16th of March from 8 a.m. till 11 a.m. Featuring guest appearances from motorsport legends and F1 drivers, it's the perfect way to kickstart your Grand Prix weekend in style. For more information, visit grandprix.com.au.
Don't forget to like the Australian Grand Prix on Facebook for behind-the-scenes news, updates and exclusive opportunities.
This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
Formula One has raced at 9 venues in the United States, but has always struggled to gain a foothold in America. This weekend's race at the new Circuit of the Americas track in Austin is the first time F1 has been to the US since Indianapolis in 2007. So to talk about that, I caught up with McLaren team principal Martin Whitmarsh.
I thought I'd start with, to paraphrase, you've said that F1 needs America more than America needs F1. Do you mean from a commercial point of view? Are we talking audience growth, or what do you mean by that stuff?
I think in all those dimensions, America is such a vast market, and it's such a car market. That's to say, they love motor cars in North America, and I think we've got a product which we ought to be able to. It's a very different product to NASCAR, but I think we ought to be able to conquer America, and we have failed to do so for a whole variety of reasons. We've been intermittent in our time there. We haven't focused enough on the entertainment factor that's necessary. We've generally been in the wrong place. We've done no promotion development there, and therefore I think there's a great challenge, but also a great opportunity, because I think inherently we have got a product that can work there. I think at the moment Formula One is less predictable. There's more overtaking for reasons of DRS, kerbs, tyres, etc. And I think now is the time when we've got to go to America and we've got to work hard. I think Formula One has been used to obviously new venues in Europe, South America, Asia, lots of parts of the world where we can arrive and the consumers or our fans, they know what Formula One is, they understand it and they like it and they appreciate it. But North America, I think we'll treat as a new market. The majority of the population there don't know, don't understand, don't care about Formula One, and therefore I think we've got to acknowledge that and acknowledge that really we all have to work harder to. It's a sport like many sports where the more you know about it, the more you understand it, the more intrinsically interesting it is. And I think we can't just arrive and assume that people will get it, because I don't think they necessarily will.
You mentioned one of the venues, Indianapolis, was obviously the last place Formula One was at in 2007. A lot of things have changed in the sport, as you detail, but also a lot of things have changed globally in terms of economics. You've gone to a lot of new markets in the last few years. The world economic climate has changed dramatically since then. Is America still commercially what it was for the sport and for the team?
No. You know, if you've only got to walk up and down the paddock here and look at the names that emblazon the cars, or the team shirts, or the garages. Effectively, they are the primary investors in our sport. If you now list all of those and then go down through them and say, list your three biggest markets, I imagine 98% of those names will put America in, or probably one, two, or at worst, three in the list of major markets. So it's massively important. I think we've often been in the wrong place without the consistency and without the marketing. Naturally, you would associate Formula One, or I would, in terms of position, or in terms of an appropriate hinterland, as being East Coast, West Coast. But you know, I appreciate it may not be possible to put them where we want them to be. We're going to Austin, which is neither East Coast or West Coast. But I, you know, I understand that Austin's a very young, lively city, so hopefully we can really make it work there. The West Coast at some stage would also be the right place for us to visit and to develop the sport in.
And we know the Americans are very patriotic with their sport. Their baseball series is called the World Series, despite the fact that nobody else actually competes in it. But things along those lines, how much of a kick would an American driver and or team or significant presence have in terms of pushing one of the teams to the forefront and getting the sport more popular?
I suspect, I mean, I don't fully understand the North American psyche, but I suspect they've got to be winning as well to build that. You know, until recently disgraced, you know, people like there were Lance Armstrong or Greg LeMond in cycling brought cycling to prominence. You go back 20 years, cycling was completely unknown in the States, and it took off with some successful North Americans. So that's the easy route to say what we need is a successful North American either driver or team in Formula One. I don't think either are in prospect in the short term, frankly. So that being the case, I think we just got to get stuck in, work hard, promote and develop it. And you know, it might be one of those situations that you develop the sport first, the drivers come second. At the moment, as I say, I don't think we can rely upon, if you like, that easy formula of a winning driver or a winning North American driver or a winning North American team. I don't think it's going to happen in the short term.
You mentioned NASCAR and to a lesser extent IndyCar before. There are different markets, but they're a motorsport market. Both sports do things very differently to Formula One, as we all know. Are there some elements of that Formula One could perhaps learn from, or perhaps, you know, loosen things a little bit to try and cater for that market, or is that just a bit of a wish?
No. I think, firstly, for North American sport focuses significantly on entertainment,
yes.
And Formula One has over the years probably not put enough emphasis. So for the purists that were within it, we've enjoyed it, but perhaps we weren't putting out something that was as entertaining as it should have done. I think now you look at the last few championships, and this championship in particular, it's, you know, it's seesawed around. So you've got the, you know, lack of predictability from one race weekend to another, and then the lack of predictability throughout the weekend itself. And you know, and then during the race, you know, things like DRS, which the purists would never have accepted in yesteryear, because you know, there is artificiality about it. But I think it was the right and an appropriate concession to be making to the spectacle. So I think the sport is now, you know, I think it's a sport where you can take an interest in, you know, the gladiatorial contest between drivers, and that's, you know, the Sebastian Vettel versus Lewis Hamilton or versus Fernando Alonso, and those are really exciting contests. There's the classic team competition between Ferrari, McLaren, Red Bull. There's the technology race, and that's, I think, that you know, you can really if you promote and educate in North America, people can really pick up on that. There's, you know, the supposed glamour of it all as well, and but I think, you know, I think Formula One today is much more unpredictable and consequently much more entertaining than it was only a few years ago. And I think we've recognised. I don't think, you know, we're going to quite go as far as World Wrestling Federation style of sport. And you know, I think people want to believe there's an element of purity about Formula One. It is the pinnacle of motorsport worldwide. So it's a very different product to NASCAR. So going into that market, or into North America, I think you're not going to try and replicate that, because actually NASCAR does it very well, and they market it very well, and they promote it very well. So, but I think you can learn from some of the commercialization that NASCAR has brought to the sport, whereas, you know, I think comparatively, Formula One can, you know, eclipse any other category of motorsport in North America if it goes there, recognizing, as you said at the beginning, that we need North America more than it needs us, and therefore we've got to be prepared to work at it, to adapt the sport if necessary, but to make sure we do everything that we can to appeal to the North American public.
One final one before I let you go. New circuits are, to use an American phrase, a dime a dozen these days. There seems to be a new track coming on every year for about the last 5 or 6 years. How far in advance of going to somewhere like Austin is the team preparing in terms of maps and sending people to the track and checking things out from a logistics point of view? What's the process?
No, I think you start about a year out and you start looking at it. We factor it into, you know, we try, and as soon as we've got a calendar, a Formula One car ultimately is a compromise. You know, if you were going to Monaco 20 times in a year, the Formula One car that you would have is different to, for instance, if you were going to 20 Monzas. So to some extent, you're doing parametric design studies, you're making engineering iterations based upon a weighted set of assumptions about what the calendar is. So you gather information about a new circuit, and that goes into the design process. And you're having to make those trade-offs in a design that's a year out.
Martin, we're all looking forward to see how it goes. Thanks very much for your time.
Pleasure.
Don't forget, you can follow the Australian Grand Prix on Twitter at @AusGrandPrix.
This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
While this year's Formula One drivers are yet to taste the circuit of the Americas in anything other than a simulator, there's one man closer to home who's visited the circuit and the city of Austin. And we're joined on the line by Ford Performance Racing V8 supercar driver Mark Winterbottom. Frosty, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, mate. Thank you.
Tell us about your visit to Austin back in June. What were you actually over there for, and what did you make of the circuit?
Yeah, I was actually over there for some Disney work to promote Cars Land at Disneyland, but a side trip to that was going to Texas, and there was 11 corners that actually had bitumen and 11 corners that were still a dirt pile, really. So I got to drive on the first 11 corners until the bitumen stopped. But the place, it's amazing. It's got undulation, which probably the photos don't show how steep that braking will be into turn one. Some of the corners are fast and flowing, and you've got tight hairpins, very wide. It's a renowned, one of those international tracks that are built that way with wide, wide spots for parking. So I see this being one of the best racetracks on the calendar, and I think the racing is going to be really good. That's the important part about these tracks. They always build really nice tracks, but they sometimes miss out on passing, but Texas will definitely have that.
Well, it's interesting. You look at the circuit map, it looks like a mixture of a bunch of circuits. You've got the first section of the lap, as you said, the huge climb up to turn one. The free-flowing S's reminds me a little bit of Maggots and Beckett's at Silverstone. You've got the signature kilometre-long Herman Tilke straight down towards the back, and some of the tighter technical corners towards the end remind me a little bit of Suzuka in some ways, so it looks like it's got a little bit of everything.
It does. It definitely does. That first part is it's got Silverstone, you know, written all over it, except for the undulation. That sort of separates it a bit, but they've really added all these unique corners from around the world and put it into one place. So it's an amazing place. But I think the second half of the track looks like the probably the more fun part of the track, and unfortunately didn't get to drive on that. But yeah, some of the corners look amazing, and Phil, you know, all us Vantage Supercar drivers, we're going to watch with great interest this weekend, because obviously we're there next year. But seeing someone actually race on it and seeing where you can pass and all these historic corners, and it'll make a lot more sense. So I reckon every V8 supercar driver is going to be glued to the Formula One screens for their own interest for this weekend.
Absolutely. They'll be setting the alarm for early on Monday morning, next week. Tell us a little bit about Austin itself. It's got a reputation as being a music town, a bit of a university town. What's the city itself like, and what did you get up to there?
It's an amazing place, really. It's got... Because I think, you know, most expectation is, or for me, when I went over, it was going to be all desert, scorpions, all that sort of stuff. But they probably think when they come to Australia, kangaroos hop down our street. But it's very trendy. There's a lot of bars. It's the music capital. It's also got a lot of these caravans, which are situated on each corner, and they're all restaurants. So a lot of the My Kitchen Rules and all those people come from these caravans in Texas, and they have their own little cuisines, and so food is a definite part of Texas as well, and it's very trendy. But then you can go the opposite scale, about a kilometre from the track, is a place called Wild Bubba's Game and Grill, and it's called, the slogan is, "You catch it, we cook it." So you can go from ultra slick city life to a kilometre from the track where they're eating antelope burgers and what else? There was a deep-fried cricket that you could eat as well. So you can go from one extreme to the other. But it's definitely a hidden treasure, and Americans know about it, but I don't think many Australians know just how cool and trendy that place is, because it's completely different to probably what you expect when you go there.
Well, you're going to have to start a side business as a travel guide, I guess, before next May. But getting back to things domestically for you, you've got two rounds remaining at Winton and Sydney Olympic Park, second in the championship at the moment, but you've got a pretty tough task to chase Jamie Whincup down from here. What are your thoughts on the season?
Yeah, it's been a very good year, but if you fall short of the championship, it's always a disappointment. So, you know, it's not looking good for us. Jamie's had a very strong couple of rounds since Bathurst and has put himself in great position. So, you know, we're still trying to catch him. There's four races left, two rounds, so 600 points on offer. I need 300 to win the championship to gain on him. So, you know, it's near impossible, but our sport always got that hidden element of the mechanical factor and the unknown. So we'll keep fighting. Sydney's very good for us, and Winton's our home test track. So all looks like we'll, you know, they should be good rounds for us. So need him to have an issue, and if he does, we, you know, definitely back in the championship. But we're sort of praying on the mishaps more than race wins at the moment.
And we could talk about the sense of flying 36 hours to do 36 laps at Abu Dhabi another time, I guess, but you do realise that in the aftermath of the races there, that you were actually a trending topic in Australia on Twitter. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, unfortunately, it wasn't for my brilliant race wins, but it was for other reasons. But, obviously there was a bit of banter over there, but we come away. It was a tough weekend. Our car speed wasn't really where it needed to be, and 12 laps when you qualify badly is very tough per race. So tried to drive aggressive and push through, and got the best result I could over there. But not what we expected. We thought we'd go a lot better, and the end result was what it was. So we need to bounce back in a week's time to get back on track.
Well, that was an extremely diplomatic answer. I appreciate that. I'm sure people can go and Google what I'm talking about if they're curious. But, Frosty, look, we wish you all the best of luck for those last four races. Thanks very much for the insight on Austin, and look forward to seeing you guys go around there next May. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Tickets are now on sale for the 2013 Formula One Australian Grand Prix from March 14 to 17 at Albert Park. Make sure you don't miss the chance to book early and get the best seat in the house to see Mark Webber and Daniel Ricciardo on the grid at their home Grand Prix. Go to grandprix.com.au or call Foxtix on 1800 100 030 to find out more.
And that's all we have time for in this edition of Keeping Track. Don't forget to like the Australian Grand Prix on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at AusGrandPrix, and go to grandprix.com.au, where you'll find a complete archive of all of our shows. Thanks to our guests Martin Whitmarsh and Mark Winterbottom. Thanks to Peter Travaskis. And also thank you to Sylvia Hoffer-Frangipani and her punctuality. Thanks for listening, and join us again on Keeping Track soon.